It's Monday, June 29th. We flattened the curve so we could handle more COVID cases. Well, they've arrived. We start here. State and local leaders hit the pause button, or in some cases, rewind.
We don't have ICU beds. We don't have staff to come in anymore. We don't have ambulances to spare.
Yet after months to prepare for this, hospitals still might not be ready. Why doctors are worried we're sprinting toward a cliff. The president thanks his supporters, including one who shouted white power.
And he did it with a comment that said thank you to the great people of the villages.
If the tweet is disturbing, what do you call a pattern of tweets? We'll break it down. And military officials knew of a Russian bounty scheme to shoot American soldiers.
From a political perspective, there's only so much you can ignore. And this is going to be hard for the president to ignore.
So why does the White House say no one told the president? From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. It's very easy to treat COVID-19 as something where, you know, you reap what you sow.
We're learning more about a summer tradition that happens every year with Lakeway students. It's a large party called Pong Fest. And because of this year's party, nearly 300 students could have been exposed to COVID-19.
There have been several mass gatherings lately where people, especially young people, have said, you know, if I get coronavirus, whatever, I gotta live my life. It's a risk I'm willing to take.
This is day two of me having COVID.
In Maryland, a man who organized rallies to reopen businesses, guess what, got sick.
I crashed later in the day, had to go to the emergency room. I thought I was actually having a stroke. I've had TIAs in the past.
Now, he says he's okay, although, frankly, to see his post, he sounds pretty shook up by how hard this virus hit. But the notable thing here is that he is refusing to tell contact tracers who he might have come into contact with recently.
In Michigan, at least 85 people contracting the virus after eating out at the same restaurant.
And that is the thing. None of us are making choices that will only affect ourselves. By the time you find out you have COVID-19, chances are you have already spread it to several people, particularly if you're not wearing a mask.
I'm not putting that mask on my face. I can't do it. I just ain't gonna do it. This ain't Russia, and you ain't gonna make me do it.
This woman at a North Hollywood Trader Joe's enraged after being asked to put on a mask.
I have a breathing problem. My doctor would not let me wear a mask.
Well, yesterday, we learned that the number of confirmed cases worldwide has risen past 10 million. And again, that's just confirmed cases. The biggest hotspots right now are Latin America, sub-Saharan Africa is becoming a concern, and the United States. That is where this virus is finding it possible to spread the quickest. Let's start this week with ABC's chief medical correspondent, Dr. Jennifer Ashton. Because Dr. Ashton, if the curve is unflattening, as it were, what is the most concerning part of that to you?
Well, first, Brad, I think when you look at the curve, we have to distinguish. Are we looking at the curve of the entire United States? Are we looking at the Sun Belt? Are we looking at an individual state or region within that state? It's not a one-size-fits-all picture, but in general, let's go back a little bit.
In terms of not taking this seriously and not putting in place the necessary measures, we have a second chance now as a society to put in place the necessary public health interventions, to put in place...
In May, the World Health Organization really urged governments to set a test positivity percentage at or below 5% to use as a measure of how their testing capacity is doing and how the virus is doing. And in fact, when the United States set its gating and reopening criteria, we just barely met that. We eked in right below 5%.
Today. Florida, South Carolina, Georgia, and Nevada all reporting daily records for new coronavirus cases. And look at Nevada in particular. The state had never reported more than 500 cases in a day until now, 1,100 new cases on Saturday alone.
Now we're seeing states in the U.S., Brad, that are at 15%, 14%. So to say going in the wrong direction is an understatement.
One of the major hospital systems here in Arizona notched a near 20% increase in COVID patients in just a 24-hour period.
But here's really the biggest concern, Brad. Remember back a few months ago, everyone was talking about this phrase, flatten the curve, flatten the curve. Well, there's another part to flattening the curve, and it's called raising the line. And what that refers to is the capacity of the U.S. healthcare system to respond not only to a COVID-19 pandemic, but to the run-of-the-mill things that we have to deal with in medicine every single day.
Yeah, like you were essentially saying like you want to flatten the curve before it gets up to that red line of our medical capacity, right? Because after that, like people just stop getting care. Like you have to choose between who lives and who dies. Like it gets nasty.
Yep, and that's when we say we're drowning.
What we're doing right now is our ICU, we're expanding those beds capabilities for the COVID ICU. We are also having preparatory plans for expanding floor beds for these patients with higher level of monitoring.
That's when hospital emergency rooms are full and they have to go on what's called diversion, meaning they call the 911 system and say, don't bring your ambulances here because we don't have beds for any patients. And when I say any patients, Brad, I mean any patients with asthma attacks, falls, car accidents, heart attacks, appendicitis, you name it. They don't have room. And we're already seeing that in some states. And it's not just the room, it's the supplies. We're hearing about supply chain demands not being met because of the shutdowns in China and India interrupting our generic drug supply.
As in prescriptions that have nothing to do with COVID necessarily.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And we're talking about things like antibiotics, epinephrine, Lasix, which we use as a diuretic for patients with congestive heart failure. Some of these shortages predated the pandemic, no question. But the Department of Homeland Security now released at the end of last week a report saying there are over 200 drug and medical supply shortages caused partially by the shutdown in China and India for the COVID pandemic.
Arizona nurse Bridget Harrigan, who volunteered to help hard-hit New York, flying back home to help. Just days ago, she told ABC News the conditions were bad, but now she says they're even worse.
We had to move patients out of an entire unit so that we could dedicate that whole new unit to COVID patients. So,
you know, as a doctor, when I see reports and hear physicians saying, we don't have ICU beds, we don't have staff to come in anymore. We don't have ambulances to spare. We don't have drugs. We don't have beds.
With what I've seen in the numbers and what my friends have seen, we are New York now. I mean, it's already here.
That's a problem. That's literally like a marble rolling off a table. You know, it's only a matter of time till it gets to the edge and falls off.
But wait. So if flattening the curve was not to necessarily mean that less people get it because this virus is this super spreader, but to keep us from brushing up against that line, to essentially buy the U.S. time to deal with more cases, have we just wasted that time?
Well, that was part of the point, and I think a lot of people forgot that.
It's not ready. It's not. We're not ready. I do regret going out that night.
And, you know, I think we all have a little bit of that in ourselves, right? We all say, oh, that was really unpleasant. Let's just get back to normal. But the virus is still here.
I mean, I'm the walking person that was just fighting this thing of like, ah, come on, it's not that serious. And I got it.
In Miami-Dade County, beaches closing for the upcoming 4th of July weekend as Florida bars are now banned from serving alcohol.
The virus is not on vacation, and it has demonstrated that it can spread just as effectively in warm weather as it did in the winter.
The governor of Texas ordering all bars and outdoor tubing businesses to close immediately and limiting restaurant capacity to 50% one day after pressing pause on the state's next phase of reopening.
Unless we follow those recommendations, which is wear a face covering or a mask and stay 6 feet or more apart, and wash your hands. It's not one or the other. I don't think we have much hope to get through the rest of the summer and the fall without some major medical trauma.
The answer to the question at the national level is clearly going to be, would masks be treated like this kind of divisive partisan issue if you had the president and vice president consistently wearing them, saying what doctors are telling them, that they are a game changer here? At the local level, I think the question continues to be, how far are leaders willing to go right now? Well, over the last few days, we've seen governors and mayors not just halt reopenings, but go further than perhaps even they anticipated, locking certain businesses back down again and instituting, in some cases, mask requirements in public. Dr. Jen, thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Something big happened in Mississippi this weekend.
In our districts, there are a lot of people around the state of Mississippi
that deep down in their hearts, they know this is the time for Mississippi to make the change.
Ever since the death of George Floyd, there's been this renewed criticism of symbols like the Confederate flag. Well, Mississippi is still the only state flag in the nation where that Confederate battle flag makes an appearance. And you'd think this debate on whether to keep the flag might fall along racial or political lines, and to be sure, there were several white Republican lawmakers saying this is part of the state's history, maybe you should go to a popular vote in November.
I love the people of Mississippi, and I trust them to make this decision. If they put this on the referendum, if they choose to change it, we will applaud that.
But this weekend, there were overwhelming bipartisan votes that will pave the way for that flag to go.
By a vote of 37-14, the bill passes.
This bill would create a commission to design a new flag. The governor says he will sign that bill. And yet, as Mississippians describe this kind of racial healing that was taking place, other Americans were looking at a tweet Sunday morning from President Trump.
Damage control at the White House after President Trump retweeted a video showing a supporter making a racist statement.
A retweet of a video where a Trump supporter is shouting the words white power. ABC's Rachel Scott covers the White House. Rachel, this has really taken off since yesterday morning. Can you just walk me through it?
Yeah, Brad, and the White House is really trying to explain this one. The president of the United States is using his enormous platform to amplify this racist message. He blasted out this video to his 82 million followers. There is this parade of golf carts in this retirement community known as the Villages in Florida. And this man was driving a golf cart displaying some Trump 2020 campaign signs. There's some counter protesters that show up. They are yelling some inflammatory things at Trump supporters. And then you hear this man fire right back.
White power! Yes, there you go, white power!
And he starts shouting the words white power repeatedly. Well, the president taking a 2-minute clip of that video and sharing it out on his Twitter. And he did it with a comment that said thank you to the great people of the Villages.
And what did the White House say? Like, the tweet's down now, right? They deleted it?
Yeah, the president decided to pull down this tweet. Senator Tim Scott, the Senate's only black Republican, called on the president to delete the post.
What's your reaction to the president retweeting that?
Well, there's no question he should not have retweeted it and he should just take it down.
And the White House responded saying that the president did not hear that one statement made on the video. And they added what the president saw was tremendous enthusiasm from his many supporters. But Brad, the president has been asked about some of the tweets that he shares.
Why did you retweet
something
that said
fire Fauci?
Why did you?
I retweeted somebody. I don't know. They said fire. Doesn't matter.
Did you notice that when you retweeted?
Yeah, I noticed everything.
He has been honest and has insisted that he keeps a close eye on what he shares. Mm.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's not like subtle. Like you hear this like 10 seconds into the video, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And he says it more than once, Brad.
Well, and so there have been, when you look back at the last 4 years, 5 years, a while back, there have been several objectionable tweets by President Trump, some where race was like directly involved. Rachel, why did this one seem to strike such a nerve?
Well, there's even more outrage building over what the White House and the president are not saying. Yes, the president pulled down the tweet, but the White House and the president did not condemn the words white power or call it racist.
The president and the growing firestorm after tweeting, telling four Democratic congresswomen to go back to their own countries.
Does it concern you that many people saw that tweet as racist and that white nationalist groups are finding common cause with you on that point?
It doesn't concern me because many people agree with me.
And Brad, the president has a history of sharing conspiracy theories and racist content on his Twitter platform, and many even pointing back to the moments right after that deadly incident in Charlottesville when white supremacists clashed with counter protesters.
But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
You know, and Brad, I repeatedly asked the White House whether or not the president condemned the words white power, and they told me they were not going to comment on this any further. And this really does lead to even more criticism. Some people asking the question of why the president is so unwilling to just come out and condemn or denounce some of these racist phrases.
Yeah, and the fact that you asked the White House, do you have anything more to add? They say no, essentially leaves it as is, which is, the president thanked a group of people for supporting him. One of those people was shouting white power, and the president really hasn't taken back that thanks or denounced that particular supporter at all. Rachel Scott in Washington, thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, if you were commander-in-chief and Russians were paying people to shoot your soldiers, you'd want to know, right? More after the break. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November, and while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The American war in Afghanistan has been going continuously now for 18 years, primarily, of course, between the U.S. and the Taliban. But over the last year, we have been reporting on attempts by the U.S. and the Taliban to reach a peace, to get the U.S. out, hopefully in the name of saving lives.
I really believe the Taliban wants to do something to show that we're not all wasting time.
Well, on Friday, the New York Times reported that amid these peace talks, Taliban fighters were being offered cash to go kill American troops. Not being offered cash by their commanders, but by Russian spies. A military official has now confirmed this account to ABC News. With that, let's go to Colonel Stephen Ganyard, a former Marine and State Department official, now a contributor to ABC. Colonel Ganyard, it sounds like essentially a bounty system, right? What do we know about it?
It is a bounty system, or at least what we believe is a bounty system, Brad. And the scary thing is it's been going on apparently since throughout 2019. So it's been going on for quite a while, being run by Russian intelligence. You know, the U.S. and Russia for years during the Cold War have trained proxies to fight the other country. But when you directly pay somebody, whether it's criminals or the Taliban, to kill Americans, that crosses the line into a war crime.
Well, and so that would make Russia look much worse. But should it be surprising overall that Russia would want to beef up this conflict, right? Because I'm thinking, you know, if a couple of American soldiers get killed, all of a sudden you've got more calls from the states to, you know, we can't leave now. We can't give the Taliban the satisfaction. We have to stay. Well, Russia would love that. They love to see America in a quagmire.
Right. Russia loves to see U.S. troops killed in faraway lands. They themselves paid a terrible price in Afghanistan for their incursion.
Superpowers aren't supposed to lose. As Vietnam was for us, Afghanistan has been a sobering experience for the Soviet Union.
And so they're paying back the U.S., but they're doing it in a way that's illegal by common law, and it's terribly destabilizing to the relationship.
Nobody briefed or told me, Vice President Pence or Chief of Staff Mark Meadows, about the so-called attacks on our troops in Afghanistan by Russians, he tweeted.
Well, then, can you walk me through the U.S. response? Because the White House didn't say, yes, this happened. No, this didn't happen. Instead, they just said the president and the vice president were never briefed on this. What is that supposed to mean?
Right. The reporting we're seeing is that this was known as early as January, been passed up the chain, common knowledge by the chief of station in Kabul, to the CIA, to chief of station. So people had to know. The CIA had to know. We know that the National Security Advisor chaired a meeting in March to discuss the issue. So at least the National Security Advisor knew. Why the president didn't know, that's hard to fathom.
The Director of National Intelligence is denying that the president knew about it, but he is not denying the intelligence. So either the president knew and didn't do anything, or didn't know, which could even be more problematic for the White House.
The reporting says that the president's daily briefing, that big intelligence book of the highest secrets that the U.S. has put in front of the president every day, had this intelligence in it. Now, whether the president didn't see it or it got pulled by somebody before it got to him, that's a question. But certainly, as National Security Advisor knew about it, why it wasn't raised to him, it's hard to say.
With him, all roads lead to Putin. I don't know what the Russians have on the president politically, personally, financially, or whatever it is.
Think about what's happened since we've known this. The president has invited Mr. Putin to the White House, and the president has pushed for Russia to join the G7.
And by the way, getting along with Russia is a great thing. Getting along with Putin and Russia is a great thing.
Hard to square that with knowing that they're trying to kill or assassinate our troops in Afghanistan illegally.
Well, and so that's the big question I wanted to ask you, Colonel Ganyard, is what does this then say about the U.S.-Russia relationship and whether that dynamic is different from the Putin-Trump relationship?
From a political perspective, there's only so much you could ignore, and this is going to be hard for the president to ignore. But there's a bigger question here, Brad, and that is the unit that is doing this. There's a unit in the intelligence part of the Russian military, the GRU, not the KGB, but the GRU, called 29115. And this unit is designed to create instability in Europe. They've already been tied to two assassination attempts, two coup attempts, and apparently they're the ones that are providing the money here.
Britain blames Russia for the Salisbury spy poisoning. Now it's emerged the same Russian military intelligence unit allegedly targeted UK and other NATO forces in Afghanistan.
So all this ties back to a very shadowy Russian military intelligence units that's doing things to destabilize not only in Afghanistan, but in Europe, which means this isn't going to go away soon because it involves far more than just the United States.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, the Russian government and the Taliban have continued to deny that any of this happened. President Trump tweeted last night he was never informed about this because intelligence officials didn't find the information credible. What we do know is this made it to top intelligence and military officials, and yet the commander-in-chief says not to him. Colonel Ganyard, thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. Godzilla has arrived.
The hazy skies in the southeast, some of that's attributed to that dust that came off of Africa earlier this week.
You might have heard about this gigantic dust storm from the Sahara Desert in Africa. Well, in recent days, it has arrived in the U.S. And the scale of all of this is actually hard to wrap your mind around. So here's how it works. Every year, around June, monsoon winds kick up a ton of sand from the Sahara. Remember, the desert is the size of the U.S. mainland, so there's a ton of sand to kick up. This year, scientists say, was an amount they haven't seen in decades. When the plume gets high enough, it starts to ride the trade winds, a couple miles above the ocean. It can travel almost 5,000 miles in 3 days. Well, this year, the winds have been so strong that African dust could arrive in the Midwest. It's been known to carry tiny particles, but think about it. Also, bacteria from camel dung, even live locusts have been caught up in the journey before.
Air quality poor in Atlanta today, the Carolinas, Louisville as well.
The biggest concern here for Americans is poor air quality, respiratory infections. But there are some good things to come out of this too. Those winds actually help replenish soil in the South American rainforest. They reverse erosion on Caribbean islands. Importantly, they can also help counteract tropical storm winds, meaning fewer hurricanes southeast. In the meantime, all that hazy air means people along the Gulf Coast are seeing some incredible sunsets. Perhaps more reason to stay inside for a hot second. Hey, if you're enjoying the show, a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts is a huge way to help us out. You can do it right on your phone. It's easy. Also, check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Start Here ABC. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer.
We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.